One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
A velvet touch to me right now. After all this time, push the push and light the light. It feels so good, it must be right. I know every if you know what I mean. I've been kissed by souls, by souls unknown. There we go. But please kiss me again. Push the light. I'll be coming home real late tonight. I know every corner of her house right now. If you know what I mean, I've been kissed by souls, by souls unknown. There we go.
Night, it feels like a velvet touch to me right now. After all this time, I've been kissed by souls, by souls unknown. There we go.
Absolutely fabulous. He even had the shaky bits as well in betwixt times with the, I don't know, maracas or some sort of wonderful thing.
I tell you what, Alex, let me tell you, I've got a theory that a record is not a record until you've got real maracas on it. You know, I'm not talking about these little eggs. You obviously know about these things, don't you?
I mean, the voice you've just heard is the awesomely talented Steve Fulton. Steve, welcome to the program. How are you?
Well, I'm very well. I'm very well.
That's good.
I'm down here at Folkestone in lockdown, as we all are. Tier two, tier three,
it'll all end in tears. What the hey, tears for fears. A band you haven't played with, I don't think. One of the rare bands who you haven't actually sort of shared your skill and joy.
Well, back in the day, But thanks for playing the track, Alex.
It's a tremendous system. And I also love the video, presumably the video with all three fabulous musicians, coordinated via Zoom, was it? Or was it Facebook?
Right, yes. All right. You're talking about the... we did two 40-minute shows. We did one. And then, of course, hi there, people. There are other people here.
This is Jessica. Jessica from North Carolina, who's also been experiencing the joy of the wonderful Souls band there. How are you, Jessica?
Hello, I'm good. Hi,
Jessica. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I've just been... I've been having some... let me just get a hot sauce. Carolina Reaper. You know about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, that's so cool.
We watched a program on Netflix about We Are the Champions. It's a series of people that do the best, like yo-yos, but there was a chili eating competition from
Oh my goodness.
The Carolina Reaper was there. Anyway, we digress.
Yeah, that's so cool, you know that.
Steve, we're used to going on all sorts of other interesting ways whenever Jessica joins the program. That's why we have her strapline jingle. Do you know what they call tea in North Carolina? Tea. Sweet tea, I should say. I haven't got the script right. Do they call sweet tea in the South? Answer tea. I don't know. Just looking through some of the guys you've actually played with, Steve, The Who, Paul Young, Richard Strange. I mean, as you say, living the rock and roll lifestyle so you don't have to. It all started when you actually arrived in London from your hometown of Manchester in 1972. What an extraordinary year that might have been when we had the three-day week, I believe.
I was only 8 months old.
Exactly.
That was a weird thing, He went like this. Very basically, Manchester, we had a band, and we decided that to make it big, we'd have to come to London. So we did. Mm-hmm. We came down overnight in two bands, with boxes of breakfast cereal to live on for 6 months, that sort of thing. But the band split up within a few weeks, and I'm hanging
out. Went nuclear, Steve. It went nuclear. It was atomic rooster. It had no other choice but to split up. It's atomic fission, obviously.
But you know that Atomic Rooster reformed about 4 years ago, 3 years ago, with Pete French, and obviously without Vincent Crane. We had tours in Germany and stuff this year.
It folds into Atomic Fusion, as we actually welcome from Birmingham, lockdown heavy Birmingham, of course, Tier 3. She sent me a text yesterday saying, "Happy Tier 3 Day, Katie Grimerson." How are you, Katie?
Hello, I'm good, how are you?
Now, I have a feeling, Steve, I just have a feeling that given that Katie is a huge follower of Oasis and so on and likes this particular kind of music, in particular blues rock, etc., that she might be a big fan of the particular tune we've just heard. Katie, what did you make of it?
Oh, it's really good. Loved it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's, that was... we recorded that about a year ago. That was just live in the studio. We have got a new EP that we recorded in lockdown. You know, I sent a click track to my drummer. He did his bits, sent it back to me, and I did my overdub. So that's the new EP. But that one, Souls of Gnome, was done a year ago. And it was part of four tracks that we did, themes from imaginary movies. So I had this idea that that you're in a cinema and you're seeing a David Lynch movie or a Tarantino movie, and this music comes on, and you stand up and announce to the cinema, I want to know who plays music like this, and people start throwing, popcorn at you and stuff. Sit down. So that's the whole vibe of the band, is like a David Lynch movie.
That's do you know, I was actually thinking, Steve, you're even echoing the David Lynch hairstyle, which is really impressive. You know, you've got your David Lynch thing, you've got a David Lynch hairstyle as well. It's fantastic. As you said before, Jessica and Katie actually joined us, of course, no piece of classic pop music is replete without some maracas, some decent maracas, as I said, or as I refer to them, the shaky things that Davy Jones used to use in the Monkees. Jessica, we haven't had a chance for you to share your thoughts on Souls Unknown, referred to obviously as S-O-U-L-S, as in souls, not the things that we put on shoes, souls, different line entirely.
Yeah, it's a very unique style of music that I don't tend to listen to, but it's very, I like it. It's very different. I think that a lot of the music nowadays on the radio tends to sound a bit of the same, but it's nice hearing something very different and like very emotionally evocative. It's very nice.
Thank you very much indeed. If I just get a bit sort of nerdy about this, with this band, in the past I've been like a guitar god type thing, you know. I'm using that in inverted commas.
You've recorded with David Bowie, Paul Young, The Who we've already mentioned, Belinda Carlisle, Donny Osmond. Goodness sakes.
Donny Osmond. So you are.
And they called it Puppy Love. I couldn't resist it, Steve. I just had to, you know.
That was a very weird one. I just received Donny Osmond. A friend of mine called me up the other week and said, Steve, I was watching late night TV and I'm sure I saw you playing guitar with Donny Osmond, you know. Oh, yeah, that was me. You know, that was, There's actually a funny story, but you'll have to go on my YouTube channel to see it.
That's quite all right. You're also in the 90s toured with Belinda Carlisle, you know, Circle in the Sand and Heaven is a Place on Earth. Genius.
Well, there you go, yeah. That was I've messed everyone's career up, basically. That's what I do. I'm a professional messer.
I would beg to differ. I mean, I'm looking at certainly Steve Bolt's website, and as you said, a rock and roll lifestyle from that point of view. 2013, of course, you had a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Galaxy Music Awards, and of course that was working with Dead Man's Corner. With respect to that, and as we say, your music and composing talents have been sought out by Paul Young, The Who, Rick Wright, Dave Gilmour, John Otway, Bob Dylan, David Bowie, we mentioned, Belinda Carlisle, lots of others. I mean, this is going to be a question you probably can't answer, but is there a particular favourite? Is it a case of, well, Bob Dylan was okay, but David Bowie was actually a nicer lad? Well, you know, what's the line here?
The Bob Dylan thing was just a call from a record company saying, Steve, there's a part for you in this film that Bob Dylan is making. So Bob Dylan made this film called Hearts of Fire in the late 80s or early 90s. I had a part in this film, and it's very bizarre, you know, because Bob was going through one of his very bizarre not speaking to anyone periods. But I managed to get him talking. I got him in a corner. So that was a weird one. But getting back to your question, the strangest one for me was The Who, because...
Did they ask you to smash your guitar up?
Well, yeah, the manager did. Bill Kerbish is at the Cypress. But anyway, so this one particular day, I'm in my flat in Southeast London, 1989, and the phone rang, and this voice said, Steve. I said, yeah. He said, it's Pete Townsend here. Went, yeah, right, okay. He said, no, don't hang up, it is. How would you play lead guitar for The Who? So that, you know, this was a totally bizarre thing because I'd seen the Who, you know, as a teenager.
Don't tell me, Steve, you must have said, you better, you bet. Sorry.
No, I didn't. He said, but I've got a hearing problem. But I did say, pardon.
Nice.
So that was a weird one. And the very first gig we did was upstate New York in a big arena, 90,000 people. And I'm looking up and I'm stood next to John Entwistle, God rest his soul. And, you know, the whole arena's got, you know, cigarette lighters lit. Now that would be iPhones, but. And I looked at John Entwistle, he looked at me and went, yep, this is too weird. This is so weird. So it was at that point when I realised that I've got nowhere else to go. That made me very happy.
Yeah, it's rock and roll. Okay, let's turn it over to Jessica and Katie. Jessica, questions and thoughts for yourself from your 21st century generation to a rock and roll legend, Steve Bolts. Bolts, as in, from Bolton. Amazing.
I have to ask, did you kind of know that you always wanted to do music, or is it something that you sort of stumbled into?
I can actually remember, I was watching TV, I'm an only child, sat between my mum and dad, little boy, and I saw a band called The Shadows that I like. I don't really know The Shadows, they're instrumental, very twangy, a bit like The Ventures, and I just, and the camera panned to this Fender Strat, and I thought, that's it. I remember that was the moment I had to do that. So I formed a band with my friends, and I would never consider myself like a musician. I'm more of a fan, really, and I never really studied. You know, I didn't get lessons. I'm self-taught. But that was the moment I remember. But it was kind of like, it's a bit shameful to like The Shadow, or it was. Now I think it's like a cool thing to do. Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, Pete Townsend, everyone started with The Shadows in this country.
Hank Marvin is responsible for so much, Jessica. It's quite unbelievable. I mean, you got Apache, you got A Walk in the Sun, you even have Cliff Richard playing with The Shadows, because after all, they were his backing band. Cliff Richard and The Shadows. Amazing.
Oh, yeah, of course. I've got a 1962 Fender Strat, and it's got, on the back, it's got Cliff Richard's autograph.
Well, there we are. Yeah, if only he'd actually said Cliff Richard, formerly known as Harry Webb, with a different line entirely. But what the hey? You know, why shouldn't he change his name? Katie, any thoughts for yourself? Any questions?
Yeah, so I just want to know, like, what bands you like in, like, now?
Bands I like now, yes. Well, I actually looked at my wife. She's the one that points me in the direction of new bands. There was a band a few years back called, a couple of years ago, called Pepe Deluxe. Have you heard of them?
No.
Yeah, Pepe Deluxe. They're kind of like I think they're German, but it's all quite arty and good. But I can't think of mine. You know, I'm still like that old school. I like, I'm getting into rockabilly, a lot of rockabilly now, and I'm teaching myself rockabilly guitar, which is quite an art form. And I think the older you get, I think you tend to veer towards country and western.
I'm intrigued by this, Steve, because obviously we talked about Souls Unknown, and the band's called Dead Man's Corner, and you've already said that you're sort of inspired by obviously David Lynch movies, etc. I mean, is this something we're actually working on, the sort of the notion of mortality and rock and roll lifestyles and so on? What's it all about?
Right, well, Dead Man's Corner is Louise and I got married 5 years ago in Whitstable, on next to the harbour there. It's quite famous, North Kent. And in one particular corner of the harbour is Dead Man's Corner. And I thought, it's called Dead Man's Corner because back in the day, in the Thames Estuary, there used to be prison ships. And conditions were so bad that prisoners would dive overboard, and they'd always get washed up in that corner. That's why it's called Dead Man's Corner. That's the only reason.
I'll quote the line with respect to obviously yourself, Steve, and Andrew McGuinness and Dust. Dead Man's Corner will blow your tiny minds with their guitar twanging, desert stomping, psychedelic grooves, and surfing riffs. Now, if that isn't guaranteed to go down well in Birmingham, frankly, I don't know what.
My friend Richard Strange said, played it on one of his podcasts recently, and he said, yep, that's what you're going to get when you mix Gretsch guitar, psychedelia, Syd Barrett and George Harrison, circa 1968. That's what you're going to get.
It's like a cocktail. It's a strange, mysterious cocktail.
But the thing is, a good thing, when you're old like this, you have all these influences, and so you can direct it back and just take bits. You know, I couldn't do just one type of music. It's got to all come out in a blender. And, you know, and that's how it comes out.
Paul Young, of course, a noted individual, has produced a whole variety of things, including having a backing band called, or backing singers called, the Fabulously Wealthy Tarts, which I always thought was quite interesting back in the day. We're talking 80s here, Jessica and Katie, by the way. It's really sort of 80s stuff, etc. I'm a great fan of Come Back and Stay, but some people would say Love of the Common People. Do you have a particular sort of area? I mean, I'm going to tear your Playhouse down is also pretty impressive. What's your own favourite Paul Young number that you've played on, Steve?
Well, I joined Paul when most of the first album was already recorded, so, and I did a lot of promotion with that early stuff. But I guess Tear Your Playhouse Down is quite wild, and
sung, of course, at the time as a kind of rebellion about the Margaret Thatcher-oriented government. These days with Boris Johnson, we'd probably build the playhouse up and just keep him in it, but that's by the by. That's another political point there, which we can obviously address and spend time with. Did you actually meet the fabulously wealthy Tarts?
Yeah, we were in the band at the same time.
Excellent. Yeah, that's all right. That's all I needed to know.
I tell you what, I think Jules Holland named them the Fabulous Wealthy Tarts.
Right.
They sang with him.
Because they weren't really fabulously wealthy because they were musicians. And I mean, it's fair to say they weren't neither jam nor indeed marmalade in terms of tart form. So heaven only knows where that came from. But I just thought it was interesting. Jessica, back to yourself.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what your favorite part of the creative process is for your music.
It's funny, I'm actually trying to write new songs at the moment. And I'm trying to write. And it's really difficult. You know, I get my phone and I think the best time is first thing in the morning, I pick up a guitar. If I leave it any longer, then, you know, the day interferes with you. So I've got lots of ideas on the phone. But then I've got a cabinet at the bottom of the garden with my computer and software and stuff. And I've finally broken the back of that. So I've got two new songs on the go, because I always have a guitar.
And
Shall I play a bit?
I think we should. Katie and Jessica, what do you think? I mean, it's almost like a bit of a David Lynch movie, but let's have Steve Bolts doing some live material.
This guitar here, I don't know if you can see it. This is a resonator guitar. It's kind of like what blues people play. Can you see that? Okay, it's very staggered on the small screen, but
yeah, it's good.
I've got this open tune.
Standing, and probably, as I say, the first time we've actually had some live music via one of these Zoom systems. Most bizarre, most peculiar, but still, that's what life's all about.
These times, I think Louise and I were in the Lake District, you know, up there in the Lake District, on holiday, we rented the cottage for a week when all this kicked off in March, and we suddenly realised what was happening, so we made it back home, and I just couldn't get my head around it, because I actually do solo gigs to make a living, you know, playing pubs, doing, you know, as a sort of travelling troubadour. And all of a sudden, everything just stopped. The weird thing was, when I saw Brian May on YouTube, you know, from his house, all dishevelled, and I suddenly realised that every single musician and every band in the whole wide world, all of a sudden, was stopped, wasn't doing anything. And that was a very weird thought, and it's still—I don't know what's going to happen now.
Well, I would cast one's mind back, Steve, to the animated feature film *Yellow Submarine*, where the blue meanies effectively fossilized.
Anyway, let me tell you, it's so strange you say that, because we bought *Yellow Submarine* on Amazon. Because we tried to find it on Netflix, so we can't find it. So we got it. And we watched it. It's only a month ago, and I said, "Look at that—the blue meanies." That's exactly what's happening now.
Exactly.
Guys, if you haven't seen Yellow Submarine, have anyone seen Yellow Submarine? Jessica, Kate, have you seen it?
I have not.
The Beatles animated film. And basically, everyone's beautiful, everything's in colour, but these blue meanies come along, and anyone having fun or listening to music, they get bombed and they turn to stone and everything goes grey. It's very
especially Glove.
Yeah.
I would certainly endorse that. Go and check out Jessica and Katie, the animated version of Blue Meanies. You will find you will never look at life in the same way again. It'll be like, you know, constantly seeing a whole new perspective on the world, really. Very good. In fact, I think I put it on a Resonance Rewind as well before too long as well. Steve, it's been fantastic sharing some experiences today with your good self. stevebolts.co.uk, presumably the best place to go to find out further details.
And my YouTube channel, Steve Bolts. So there's lots of stuff on there you can all watch.
Which, of course, is B-O-L-T-Z or B-O-L-T-Z for our American listeners, obviously, Jessica. That's very important. Yeah, Z, Z, etc. Let's do the usual sort of two questions, but we'll take one from each. So, Katie, would you like to deliver the first question to Steve Bolts, please?
Yes, Steve. Have you had an interesting Zoom interview with us today?
Yeah, it's been... I was a bit nervous, you know, because I don't speak to that many people. So I'm either going to clam right up or... Yeah, it's been lovely. Very nice to talk to you all. Absolutely.
Okay. And the next critical one is from Jessica.
And I do want to say just really quick, it was insanely cool getting to hear you play music, so thank you. So I hope that your answer will be yes, but will you be joining us again?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Fantastic. Steve Bolts, take care. Jessica, as ever, a delight. Katie Grimerson, keep on keeping on. We will connect again very soon. Steve Bolts, again, a reminder that, of course, Souls Unknown is a brand new single. It's out now from Steve Bolts and Dead Man's Corner. There'll be more to come. Check it out on YouTube. Purchase the video, keep on keeping on, and watch out for the Blue Meanies.
One, two, three, four, can I have a little more? Five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, I love you. A, B, C, D, can I bring my friend to tea? E, F, G, H, I, J, I love you.
Boom, 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 boom.
Sail the ship.
Boom, boom, boom.
Chop the tree.
Boom, boom, boom.
Skip the rope.
Boom, boom, boom. Look at me.
All together now.
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 Black, white, green, red, can I take my friend to bed? Pink, brown, yellow, orange and blue, I love you.
All together now.
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 The tree,
boom, boom,
skip the rope,
boom, boom,
look at me.
Back in the day, and I'm talking 1980 here, the Village People had a major hit, well, perhaps not much so major, with Can't Stop the Music, Valerie Perrine, of course, an epic that's sadly been lost in the airwaves and various other sort of signs, but it's still out there. And it does seem as though not necessarily stopping the music, but please don't stop the music, is the line that comes across for our next feature, with 95% of British folks saying they might be stressed, but music can fix it all. And a recent survey carried out by Sonos has revealed that 2/3 of us say that music makes a bigger impact on their fitness than any health supplement. These are fascinating notions. And to address that, we're delighted to welcome the Sonos Sound Experience Manager, Greg McAllister. Greg, how are you?
Hi, thanks. Good, thanks.
I feel as though we should really have a music bed for this or something. We should sing the song. We should maybe do it in choral speak. We should celebrate the music. But actually, this is kind of one of those things where, in terms of the science of sound, good music, feel-good music, upbeat music, even as we're coming into the festive season, carols and things from that point of view, they're an essential part of the human experience, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of one of the things that this study conducted by Sonos and in partnership with Daniel Mullensiefen from Goldsmiths University. That's one of the things that consistently came across, is how big an impact music can have on people's, on various aspects of people's lives. And I think actually one of the things that was most surprising for me was how consistent it was across different countries. So things like the fact that even good quality sound can have a significant positive correlation to stronger emotions and a richer musical experience. And the fact that this is consistent across different countries is, you know, so it's not affected by cultural differences or even different tastes in music.
There are huge variations, obviously, in the areas of music. There's classical music, there's ancient music, there's folk music, there's jazz. I mean, the genres are almost infinite, really. But ultimately, is it also about the quality of the sound that's important? It doesn't matter whether you're listening to a folk group band or indeed the latest incarnations of a thrash metal band. You still need to actually have a certain quality there.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, everyone's going to have their different preferences in music, but so much of music across the board is in the details. It's kind of the subtle parts of the music. And listening on a good quality speaker instead of something like a phone speaker, it just means you're getting more of the frequency range. So the kind of treble and the bass, more of the dynamics, the louds and the quiet parts, and it's also going to be less distorted. So because of all of this, you're literally hearing more of the content.
And presumably it's also analogous to the fact that those of us who purchased new television screens or flat screen systems, etc., and then sort of thought the sound is very tinny, you need a sound bar. Otherwise, somehow it's just not the same, really, unless you have a sound bar to actually work through that. Mind you, I suppose you could like tinny sort of music, but maybe not. In terms of the reason why it's such a good mood booster, does it hype up the dopamine levels? Is it just a case of, you know, as we said, whether it's disco, whatever your particular line happens to be, there's something that really actually triggers all the feel-good aspects about our aspects as human beings?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so, again, the psychologist that we worked with, Dr. Daniel Mullensiefen, he kind of explained that music's actually quite unique in that it's, like you're saying, it's able to trigger the same reward centers in the brain as things like food and sex. So that's a huge factor in why it's able to create such strong emotions in us.
Of course, there is the logical rejoinder to that, which I'm sure one or two people might have said, why not put all three together? That could be dangerous, but I just sort of put it out there as a possibility for, you know, eating whilst also sort of listening to music. And so it's an interesting line of things from there. What about your own preferences, Greg? I mean, do you have any particular musical genres or tastes? I mean, something which our ace engineer on the whole system, Paul, could actually feed through in betwixt interviews today?
Yes, I think for me, actually, you know, sound quality is always a huge factor in whether I like content or not. So, you know, bands like Radiohead that kind of consistently put out, you know, really interesting music, but with really great production, they're definitely a favorite of mine.
Right. And clearly we're in the process of Cyber Weekend and so on. People might be looking to seek out some new sound systems. They might be listening to this and saying, it's time I actually got some decent speakers for my radio to listen to Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting the Midweek Drive more effectively. So where would you suggest they should actually go to seek out quality sound systems?
Yeah, I think ordinarily I'd advise people to go and try and listen to things themselves in a shop, but naturally that's not possible right now. So as a good substitute, I think checking online reviews is a good option. You know, kind of seeing products that are 4 out of 5 stars probably means you're getting something that's dependable. I think it's also good for people to think about the kind of content that they want to listen to. You know, we've spoken about how sound quality actually heightens the kind of emotional responses that you get and provides all these benefits. So actually having a product that lets you stream music, but also listen to yourself on the radio, on podcasts and audiobooks, it kind of means you're getting the best for all of your content as well.
Yeah. In fact, returning to the survey, 8 in 10 people say that a great sound system can make or break a party.
Yep.
Which is no pressure then, obviously, in terms of the Sonos line of things on that system. 71% say a high-quality sound system has even changed the way that they feel about a song. So presumably if people are against, I don't know, the works of the Village People, I don't know why, but if they are, then maybe they could actually listen to YMCA in a decent sound system and they could actually turn out saying, actually, they're great. Why haven't we listened to them before?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to the fact that on a high quality sound system, there are just all those subtleties, the additional things of the music that you're just not going to hear on a lower quality system. So it's almost as if it hasn't been a kind of fair test. You know, it's like you've been listening to a version of the song, or kind of a hindered version of the song, before you listen on actually a good quality system.
And I know our regular country correspondent, Tessa Snart, is very keen on her playlists. Are they a useful tool in terms of developing things? I mean, there are lots of them around there in terms of putting the kind of musical tracks together and then sitting them into the system.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think playlists are a really great tool, you know, either being able to create your own or, like you say, kind of find a pre-made one that works for you. You know, I think you mentioned in the intro that kind of only, you know, 5% of people actually feel stress-free, which is a very small amount, but actually that number jumps way up to 75% feeling low stress when they're listening to a favorite song. So actually using playlists kind of like a tool, so a playlist containing all your favorite music, could be a really great thing to have for a time that you're feeling stressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a personalized theme tune as well to help you get through the day, whatever stresses and strains you might be looking to encounter. Greg, where would you suggest people could go to for further information about the Sonos sound system or others?
Yes, well, sonos.com is a great place to find information on the studies that we've been mentioning. And there's various review sites that people can check out for other stuff.
Excellent. Well, we'll wrap up with the usual two standard questions, really, which are kind of the equivalent of, is the sound system okay on this? Greg McAllister, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Say that again, sorry?
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay? Have you enjoyed the interview?
Yes.
Has it been fine?
I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely. It's been great.
I don't know. Sometimes we just, well, maybe I'll just drop them in future. So will you return in 2021? Will you come back?
Oh, absolutely, if you'd like me to.
Fantastic. Greg McAllister, Sonos Sound Experience Manager. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And happy audio holidays, Greg.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
Back in the day, Desmond Morris would probably have actually had a field day discussing the ways in which chimpanzees and other ape relatives of the human race were actually greeting each other. But what would he have made of the COVID greeting when, in essence, according to a recent survey by Worcester Bosch, it would seem that most people are actually opting for the elbow bump. Extraordinary. Or the elbow tap, in fact, as opposed to the fist bump or indeed the air kiss. Now, to actually talk us through these extraordinary social findings, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals, certainly well in the footsteps of the awesome Desmond Morris. We have behavioural expert, Dr. Peter Collett. How are you, Peter?
Fine, and how are you?
Very good indeed. And, of course, from Worcester Bosch, we also have Martin Bridges. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well, Alex. Thank you.
Excellent. Now, we've just actually gone through that process of greeting each other verbally in a wonderful world of radio via the media of Zoom, and all's well. So you can't see any fist bumps, any air kisses or various other bits and pieces. But it seems, Peter, that actually it's the elbow tap which seems to be winning it. And I just think that's a little bit awkward when you actually meet people in real life and in the flesh.
I know, but we're hard pressed for alternatives, I'm afraid. I mean, you know, there's the toe tap. I mean, I don't think I've even tried that one. I've seen it. But, I mean, it's slightly demeaning. So, you know, what else could we do? It's a way of pretending to keep our distance while at the same time making... It's a kind of remnant in a way, isn't it? It is contact of a sort, but very much an apology for contact. And it's very, very different from the handshake, which, of course, we know to be pretty universal. Although no, not entirely, it's not found in every society or in every phase of history, but it is pretty widespread, and it's not surprising because Desmond Morris would be quick to tell you that it's also to be found amongst chimpanzees. They do make hand-to-hand contact as a means of reassurance and as a way of greeting each other, but not with the same kind of elaboration as we have injected into it, because the handshake, you know, it is just a thing of wonder in the sense that it varies so much. One of the fascinating things, which I have to slip in here, is that we tend to imagine that, you know, we always shook hands as the English, but that's not the case. Back in the 17th century, the handshake was not used for greeting. It was simply used as a means of establishing a contract. So if we had a greeting, we would shake hands on that matter. But when it came to greeting, it was strictly a non-contact procedure involving either, in the case of the man, a bow, in the case of a woman, a curtsy.
Absolutely. I mean, certainly, as Urartu say, that whole notion of shaking hands on it, I suppose, echoes the time from there. There is, of course, a bonus from this point of view, Peter, insofar as, to a certain extent, the range of handshakes that you actually got from the very firm handshake to the what I refer to as the wet fish handshake, where it kind of slips away from your good self and you almost want to actually recoil by going, I mean, that's all, we don't have to worry about that now. So maybe a salute. I mean, I must admit, I'm very fond of the Namaste greeting, the one that Prince Charles kind of put forward, and the sort of almost partial salute, which also avoids contact but still recognises the specialness of other human beings on the planet. I mean, do you think that's losing ground in this sort of battle of the appropriate social interaction?
Well, it's very difficult to say because we're very much in the state of flux, certainly as far as this country is concerned. I mean, the awkward thing about the elbow tap or the elbow bump is that it's quite difficult to get your aim right. I mean, I don't know whether you've tried this, but when you shake hands, the point about the handshake is it's very much an overlearned habit. We've done it for so long, it's kind of wired into us almost, in the sense that when we come to shake hands, we don't need to actually look down. We know exactly how much pressure to apply, or most of us do, not everybody. Alas.
Yes, as I say, the wet fish is still out there, I'm sure, and you just don't want to go there.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, and there are big regional differences, by the way. West Africa, they will offer you a hand which seems very limp. So, for example, one of the people who had the limpest handshake, or still does, apparently, is Mike Tyson. If you go to West Africa, you will be surprised to discover how lacking the handshake is in grip. But to make up for that, of course, they will hang on to your hand forever while they're inquiring about your relatives, your family, your well-being, your business and whatever.
Yes, so there are
big national variations. But, you know, we are very attached to the handshake in this country. And I suspect that as soon as we get a chance, we'll be back. There will be a renaissance of handshakes.
Okay, well, of course, famously, our Prime Minister was very much in favour of handshakes before, of course, he went down with COVID himself. Martin, from your own perspective, you've been listening, obviously, to Peter's views there, a range of handshakes. What do you opt for? Is it just a case of, personally, I prefer most of my social interactions to be done via Zoom?
Well, it's funny. From a business perspective, it's always a handshake. That's a sort of, for me, a show of sincerity or a friendly greeting, etc. From when we're actually going into somebody's property, though, because the heating industry is exactly that. You go into people's homes, and this present period, it's with reluctance that they want people to enter their homes if you're a sort of outsider. You know, you're
indeed
not in their family or in the bubble. They only want you there if it's essential. They have no heating and hot water. And it is just a friendly nod. And that's after we've had a lengthy phone call to find out whether it's totally necessary. And by and large, then they will open the door, say hello, and then retreat to another room because we've asked them to, whilst the engineer attends to the problem on the boiler or the heating system, and we're just shouting literally instruction to each other, either from downstairs to upstairs or from room to room.
Yeah, I mean, this is something, again, which I suspect, I hesitate to use the term because it's become almost a cliche, unprecedented springs to mind. But from your own perspective, Peter, you seem to sort of be fairly comfortable that things will return to a form of normality and that we will actually go back to shaking hands. Is that because it's hardwired into the system, or is it a case of, could we be seeing another evolutionary step here in which the elbow bump, or perhaps the e-bump, if we're looking at using virtual reality, becomes the norm?
Well, all things are possible. I mean, we have been surprised by the way in which history outflanks our common sense. So I have to be fairly guarded, but I would suggest to you that although, you know, it's not as though the handshake is innate. There are obviously strong predispositions, because you know, non-human chimps, for example, use hand contact, you know, touch, and something approximating the handshake. And as we've seen historically and culturally, there are enormous variations. But people do kind of settle down and become attached to certain conventions and habits. And it would appear to me that that's something that's taken over in the case of the handshake. So I suspect that there is a strong elastic band that's attached between us and the handshake. And the moment we get a chance to return to it, we'll do so with great relish.
And let's not get started on the celebrity selfie, which many people have actually said, thank goodness that's obviously gone, for obvious reasons. Finally, I'm just fascinated by what I refer to as the air hug. 16% of folk who effectively hold out their arms in the hug position without touching. I mean, is that an air hug, would you say, from that point of view? A possible sort of, entry into the ways in which we interact socially?
Yeah. There's a kind of virtual hug, isn't there?
Yeah.
So what you do is, when you're parting from somebody, you extend your arm sideways and pretend to hug them, a kind of vacuum hug, if you will. And that's fairly popular. I've used it myself, and I've noticed on occasion that people are somewhat surprised. And I think that's just a temporary substitute for the real thing, because we know for certain that physical contact is an essential part of our makeup. That is definitely wired into our system. You know, babies who are brought up without touch suffer enormously, both psychologically and physically. And we know for a fact from a wealth of research that touch plays an important role, not only in our physical, but our mental well-being. It impacts on our hormone system. It elevates our oxytocin, depresses our cortisol, which of course is our stress hormone. You know, if we're not in contact physically with other people, then we suffer in all kinds of ways. And that applies as much to the hug as it does to everything else. So hug is a legitimate social opportunity to engage somebody in some kind of social touching. And we will continue to take advantage of that, I think, now that we've got here, because we didn't, of course, always engage in it. I mean, you're probably too young. I'm sure you're too young to know that there was a time when fathers did not hug their young sons, which of course they do with great abandon now.
I blame the American influence personally for that part of you, but never mind, that's a different line entirely. Martin, where can people go to find out further information about what we've been talking about today? And of course, Worcester Bosch.
Well, it's exactly that. It's the Worcester Bosch website. So go into any search engine, tap in Worcester Bosch, and we're generally up there, either top or near the top. And on the website, you'll find details of this research and also sort of instructions to a consumer or an engineer on how perhaps best to behave and perform in people's properties, particularly during this current time.
Indeed, wearing full hazmat suits is not necessarily an option, even though it might be tempting. Gentlemen, it's been fascinating and most enjoyable. I'm now engaging in a virtual handshake and salute to both of your good souls. But for the moment, Dr. Peter Collett, behavioural expert extraordinaire, and Martin Bridges from Worcester Bosch, huge thanks indeed, and be safe, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.